Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff? Only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk. Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Junk Refund Show. Today, December, what is it, the 4th? I'm not sure. Let's do the math. 5, 6, 7. This is the 3rd. December 3rd, 2025, which is a show that I am dedicating to my wonderful mother, who passed away 10 days ago at the age of 94. She was 3 weeks shy of her 95th birthday. And this is one of the great ladies in history, and I'm going to dedicate this show to her and tell you all about her. I spoke at her funeral last Saturday, and I'm basically going to share with you some of the things that I shared at that funeral, because this is a lady who didn't carry a lot of junk in her life and knew how to get rid of it if she did have it. And I'm not talking so much about, you know, bags of trash. She's good at that too, by the way. I'm talking about just a lady who had a very sound, successful, amazing, write this one up and put it in a book type of a life. Her name is Martha Horn Pingey, P-I-N-G-E-Y. That is her, born with name. Then she got married to my dad, and she added Cook to the end of the name. And then my dad passed away at the age of 47, which is 47 years ago. He passed away, leaving my mom a widow at age 47 with 10 children at home, ages 1 to 21. And I was a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints out in Missouri at the time as a 19-year-old kid. And that lady went on to carry on and move forward and just do some amazing things. So I gave a talk at her funeral, knowing for the last 10 years that sometime this was going to happen, and was kind of inspired to talk about greatness because that's what she embodied. And back in 2005, greatness, that was, 20 years ago, greatness was in the news, partially because of an NBC miniseries that came out called The Greatest Americans. And they ranked from 1 to 100 the greatest Americans of all time. I was interested to see if the gentleman that was the founder of our church, Joseph Smith, was in that list. And he was. He was number 44. Dwight D. Eisenhower was number 43. Bill Cosby, number 45. So he's surrounded by a couple of really good guys there. And Madonna, you might be interested to note, was number 49. There was a debate on the top five. Who was really the greatest American of all time? Was it George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin, Martin Luther King Jr., or Ronald Reagan? That was the question. That focus on greatness caused me to ask myself at the time, what is greatness to me? And where have I seen it in my life? And that caused me, because of my church assignment at the time, they sent me around to different congregations in the Washington, D.C. area. I wrote a talk called The 10 Greatest Things I've Seen in My Life. and I delivered it to some congregations in David Letterman style with his top 10 list. And that talk was very well received. And it was interesting to me because it kind of defined for me what greatness is to me. And that's a great question for anybody to ask themselves. When have you seen greatness in your life? And what happened? What was it about? And I'm not talking about just, you know, cool things. I'm talking about great things, you know, standout things. Things that other people did that you just went, oh my gosh, I can't believe anybody was that amazing that they would do that, you know, whatever. So I put together a talk called The 10 Greatest Things I've Seen My Mother Do in My Lifetime. And I'm going to walk through those today as a tribute to her, because what you can learn from her life deserves one radio show out of 52 that we do in a year. And this is one that can be used and passed on, especially in the podcast and stuff, passed on to anybody who is a mother, anybody who wants to have a happy, successful life, anybody who values longevity, anybody who's having a tough time with a challenge that's been thrown at them and needs some encouragement on how to deal with it. Any of that stuff is fair game, because this is one amazing lady that dazzled all of us for almost 95 years. So I put down number 10 on the list, again, in David Letterman style, top 10 order. Number 10, when I was 8 years old, I wrote a letter to an All-American quarterback at Brigham Young University named Virgil Carter. Virgil was a high school athlete out of Southern California, came to BYU, was the first of a great line of famous BYU quarterbacks, including the Jim McMahons and the Steve Youngs and the Gifford Nielsens and, you know, the Bear Bachmeyers, you know, from today, the Taysom Hills down in New Orleans, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some, Gifford Nielsen from the Houston Oilers. Anyway, a long line of great quarterbacks. I wrote a letter to Virgil Carter when I was 8 years old, and that letter said, "Dear Virgil, I am your greatest fan, and if you come to visit me someday, my mom will make you lunch." Well, about 2 weeks later, sure enough, there's a yellow Mustang convertible. This is in 1966. There's a yellow Mustang convertible in my driveway. I was 8 years old. None of my friends had Mustang convertibles, let alone any car. And sure enough, Virgil was driving the car, and Casey Boyette, the flanker back, was in the back seat, and they had their girlfriends with them. They came to visit me. Virgil gave me a chin strap, said, "Hey," he signed it, and he said, "Hey, see, if you take this to Casey, I'm sure he'll sign it for you too." And sure enough, my mom made them lunch. My mom would feed whoever needed to be fed, even if it was a BYU quarterback. Number 9, when I was 5 years old, my mother called me in from the backyard into the kitchen, and she said, "Honey, don't kiss the other 5-year-old girl out behind my mother's apartment in the back of our property. You're not old enough to do that yet." And I said, "Okay, Mom." And I summarized that at the funeral last Saturday by simply saying my mom lived the law of chastity and taught it to her kids even when we were young, much to my chagrin at the time. But I said, "Okay, Mom, I will." She was very good on teaching us appropriate behavior, even when we were young kids, for which I'm grateful. Number 8. She didn't send me up to heaven when I was 4, although she had reason to, because she had purchased some bushels of pears, and I think 3 bushels of pears, and then took them out of the bushel baskets and spread them out on the basement floor so they could ripen quicker. We put up a lot of bottled fruit in our lifetime. You can imagine, with a growing family that ended at 11 children, we would can fruit and bottle fruit to just save money and build up a storage supply of food for all of us. But she bought, when I was 4, she bought 3 bushels of pears, rolled them out and spread them out on the basement floor so they could ripen. I went downstairs, saw the pears on the floor, and said to myself, batting practice. And I grabbed a small baseball bat we had in the house, and I pretended that I was hitting home runs over the Green Monster in Fenway Park in Boston. And every one of those pears got splattered all over the walls and the ceilings and the floor when I was a four-year-old kid. I knew when I made it to age five that I had a great mom, because she could have just, you know, taken the bat and let me have it. Whammo, I wouldn't be here right now. But childhood dreams were more important to my mom than a clean basement. And I'm here to tell you, I'm a survivor of that incident. My brother also spoke at the funeral and was going through some historical records from my mom, and get this, found the check that she used to pay for those pears decades earlier. And I was amazed. I had no idea that that check was still floating around. I wasn't sure, you know, what had happened to it, etc. But she had an amazing ability to just not get too caught up in the situation and keep her cool. Now, she would be the perfect person. If every person who drove on the Beltway in Washington, D.C. had the demeanor of my mom, nobody would ever honk. We would always be letting someone else get ahead of us and pull in front of us, and we would always forgive them. Wouldn't that be a great, you know, roadway to drive on? That's just the way that she was. I've heard stories, and in fact, these were told at the funeral, where she owned some real estate, a duplex, for example, and was very hesitant to raise the rent on the people renting the duplex because they were single mothers, had young kids. She wanted to help them out. She's even been known, I didn't know this, I found this out at the funeral, she was known to go out and buy groceries and sneak into her own duplex when the renters weren't there and put them in the fridge and stock the pantry. That's my mom. What landlord does that, for heaven's sakes? Nobody that I know of except my mother. Let me go back to the little history. She married my dad at the age of 25. And my dad passed away 22 years later at 47. They were the same age. In the 22 years, my mom gives birth to 11 kids. Now, you do the math. And she told me about 6 months ago that in her lifetime, she was never in the hospital except when she was in labor. And that only changed in the last maybe, I don't know, year of her life or something, where she had to go in and just be checked for a couple of things. She had a mini stroke and she needed to go in and get checked for that. And she had to spend a night or two in the hospital. That was the first time that she was in there for anything other than a pregnancy, which is amazing. So at the age of 47, my dad dies. She's left at home with 10 children. I'm out doing church work for 2 years in Missouri. My mom stays single for about 10 years and then has a second marriage, marries a guy from Spanish Fork, Utah named Neil. His last name is Rosenbaum. So she adds that name on to the back. So it's Martha Horn Tingey Cook Rosenbaum, which is very appropriate given that her Danish-born mother was named Helga Augusta Elizabeth Pedersen Tingey. The Tingey came when she got married. So both her and her mom picked up five names. Her mom lived to be 101. And used to give advice to us when we were kids, and she said, don't ever grow old. And she would also say, I have no valid reason to complain. And that's a lady who immigrated to the United States, my grandmother, at the age of 13. And when her dad booked passage on the ship, he lied about his daughter's age and said she was 12, so she could get a child's fare instead of, I guess, what would be more of a teenager or adult fare. And my grandmother, who had nothing to do with the payment, said that she felt guilty her whole life because of that passage from Denmark over to the United States. Anyway, when I was back to my mom's situation, let's go to number seven. When I was 19, we had a church service that basically sent me off for 2 years to go do missionary work. I wanted my mother to have a nice corsage to wear at that church service, so I bought her a beautiful white orchid and put it, you know, had it done as a, up as her corsage. And then it was kind of, you know, put in inside of a plastic container, a see-through plastic container. And yours truly made the mistake, probably in just the rush of what was going on that weekend, made the mistake of putting it in the freezer the night before instead of the refrigerator. So in the morning we woke up, I went to get the orchid, and whammo, it is dark brown, completely wilted, and looked like crap. I mean, you can imagine, it looked horrible. My saintly mother wore that anyway to the church meeting. This beaten up, frozen, dead flower, brown, she wore on her lapel during the meeting. And to my mother, it was the thought that counted, not so much, you know, the outward appearance, so to speak. Gonna take a break here for just a minute and come back in a minute, but we got six more to go in the life of this amazing lady, a show dedicated to my mom, who passed away just a few weeks before her 95th birthday. I spoke at her funeral out in Utah last Saturday, and I'm telling you, it was a joyous occasion because we were so thrilled for her and my dad to once again be reunited up in heaven. My dad has been up there for 47 years waiting for his bride to come back. And he got her back about 2 weeks ago, and I frankly was thrilled. So we'll be back to tell you more about this amazing lady and her legacy, to just share it with people. This is a great show for anybody who is in the middle of a trial of some kind, anybody who just wants to find out how to be successful in life, all things considered, anybody who wants to kind of be a saint. This lady can teach you how to do it, and also how to have fun. Which will be discussed here in a minute, and a couple other stories I've got to share with you. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show. This is a tribute to my wonderful mom, Martha Cook Rosenbaum. We'll call her to shorten the name a little bit. And I'm excited to come back and tell you more about this amazing lady. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. This is your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from the parking lot of the Costco store across the street from the I-66 transfer station in Fairfax, Virginia, which I came over to this afternoon because my own Montgomery County, Maryland transfer station is closed for bulk trash drop-off, so I had to drive to Virginia to get rid of it. Thank heavens there's another one kind of in the area here. And the one in Montgomery County is going to be closed until Monday. So something tells me I'll be in Virginia a little bit. We've got a gentleman named Cyrus on the line. He's got a question or a comment. I want to make sure he gets some time. Cyrus, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
Good. I am fine, thank you. What can we do for you?
Okay, so actually I'm trying to reach Forever Family Foundation with the address 222 Atlantic Avenue. So have I reached this entity?
No, no. Forever Family Foundation, I can't help you with, but our producer, Don, can probably help you with that. But you called it a good program, though, Cyrus, because we're talking about a lady who just passed away and has gone up to be with God in the clouds. And so your comment, I mean, what you're looking for is very appropriate for what we're talking about today. But no, he can help you or get your number, and I'll help you after the show find it.
No problem. That's totally fine. I'll keep the call. You can continue with your program.
No problem. Where are you calling from, Cyrus?
So, actually, I'm calling you from Angeles.
From Angeles?
I'm not Angeles. It's Angeles. O as in Oscar, N as in November, T as in Tango, E as in Echo, L as in Lima, L as in Lima, U as in Uniform, S as in Sierra. Angeles.
What country? Are you in America?
Yes.
In America?
So actually we are a record retrieval company. And
yes.
We try to retrieve records on behalf of the attorney.
And where are you headquartered?
Our main headquarters is in Houston, Texas.
In Houston. Awesome. Okay. Very good. Well, are you in the state of Texas right now?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I wanted to find out. I've got a brother that lives in Austin. We love Texas. So thank you for calling. We appreciate you calling into the show.
Yes, no problem. Thank you so much, and have a nice day.
Okay. All right, you too. Thank you. So, we are on back to my mom's situation. Cyrus is a nice guy. My mom's situation, I'm counting down the top 10 things I saw her do in my life. I gave you the first four. We're on number six. And as long as, you know, I'm sitting out here with a 16-foot box truck parked in the Costco parking lot, not parked the way most cars would park because the truck would stand out a little bit too far. It'll be okay, but so I'm in the back part taking up some spaces, three or four parking spaces parked perpendicular to the parking lines. So a guy from Costco security or something just drove by, and I got a little nervous, so maybe he'll say something, but he didn't. He's going somewhere else. Okay, number six in the life of my amazing mother, Martha Horn Tingey Cook Rosenbaum. I told her a couple of years ago that I was going to come from Washington, D.C. out to Utah for her birthday and just spend the day with her and that we could do whatever she wanted to do and I would pay for it. So her birthday is December 13th. I flew out to see her and she knew that I liked to visit as kind of a spiritual hobby. I like to visit the temples that our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, builds around the world. And in the state of Utah, we have a bunch of them out there. At the time, probably 20 or 25. So whenever I would go out and visit my family, particularly my mom, I would try to go, you know, visit another one of these temples just because it's kind of a spiritual high. You know, it's like going to Mecca. Except our Mecca are smaller buildings all over the world, right? That's the concept, though. It's that important. So I went out there, and she knew of the, let's say, 15 or 16 operating temples in the state of Utah at the time. There were two that I had not been to. One was in Vernal, Utah. We call it Dinosaur Country. It's kind of east of Salt Lake City. And the other one was in Monticello, Utah, which is down by Moab. Great, you know, mountain biking territory down there. Those are the two that I hadn't been to yet. So I said, hey, Mom, what do you want to do for your birthday? I'm excited. What would you like to do? And she said, I want to go to the Vernal Temple. And I said, but Mom, you've already been there before. And she said, yes, but you haven't. And she insisted that for her birthday, not mine, her birthday, she wanted to go help me do something that was important to me. So she and I got in the car. This was a great thing. The two of us got in the car and drove 163 miles one way to go out to Vernal, Utah, and go to the temple out there. And I noticed on the way out that she was kind of blowing her nose a little bit and coughing. So she was a little bit sick. I just made a little mental note of that. But we went out for my for her birthday. We went out and did something that was important to me, and she supported that. And that's what she, it was her birthday. She got to pick whatever she wanted to do. And she said, no, I want to go do that. So she and I did. Now, if you have not taken some kind of a mini road trip one-on-one with a family member that's important to you, can I recommend that that's a great idea? It's just a great idea. And so we went out and did that, and it was fabulous. My mom would do things for other people, even on her birthday. Her birthday, she was not the priority still. It was other people who were the priority. And I think that's quite an amazing thing. That takes me to number five of the greatest things that I saw my mom do in her nearly 95-year life. Number five happened after we had gone to the temple out in Brno, Utah. I took her to lunch. When we went and sat in this restaurant, American restaurant, lady waitress comes up to us and says, you know, can I get you some drinks? And my mom said, yeah, I'll just have an ice water. And I had noticed on the menu two of my favorite words that were back to back, and those words are blackberry lemonade. And I said, yeah, I'll take a blackberry lemonade. And an ice water, I guess. So she brought the drinks out a few minutes later, put the ice water down in front of my mom, who once again had blown her nose, put the blackberry lemonade down in front of me, and immediately my mom takes the straw out of her ice water, sticks it across the table, puts it in my blackberry lemonade, leans over, takes about four or five big swigs up through the straw, kind of slushes that around in her mouth, and then says, ooh, that's really good. Takes the straw out of the blackberry lemonade and sticks it back in her ice water. I was stunned. This is the lady that taught me my table manners growing up. And she was so happy. And then she blew her nose again. And I thought, you know, I looked at the blackberry lemonade. I looked back at my mom. I looked at the lemonade again, and I went, okay. And I just took the lemonade and just kind of carefully slid it straight across the table. And I said, happy birthday, Mom. She was so delighted. Well, then it was time to get the entrees. My mom had ordered, and I ordered a second blackberry lemonade. When they brought the second one out and set it down, I instinctively grabbed it with my right hand around the base of the glass as though I was now defending Fort Knox. And that lemonade was not going anywhere except to my mouth. That's the way it was. So my right hand was on that glass, and I could have, you know, Mike Tyson couldn't have got that glass out from my right hand. So there we go. So now it's time for the entrees. So they bring, my mom ordered the fajitas. So they bring her a plate of sizzling fajitas. There's a lot of fajitas on this plate. It's a big meal for a lady who at the time was probably around 90-ish or something, 92 or 3. So she gets the fajitas. I went for the cheeseburger and fries. They brought out this big cheeseburger, and the top bun of the cheeseburger was situated right on top of the meat patty, like you're ready to eat it, right, with the fries on the side. The waitress sets that down in front of me, and immediately my mom looks at that bun and says, that looks good. And she reaches across with her hands, her right hand, took her two fingers, pinched about a 3-inch diameter chunk out of the top of the bun right in the middle, popped it in her mouth, chewed it a little bit, and said, wow, that's really good. And then started to eat her fajitas. Again, I was stunned. My right hand is holding on to that blackberry lemonade for dear life. My left hand is now clutching the plate that my cheeseburger is on, and I'm holding onto that plate for dear life, and I am completely disarmed and defenseless. And here is my mom having the time of her life, sucking on some more blackberry lemonade and eating her fajitas while chomping on a chunk out of my cheeseburger. I look down at my cheeseburger, it now looks like a donut, right? And I look back at my mom, and my stepfather, Neil, had told me in their home a few years earlier, she goes, you know, he said, you know, when we go out to eat, your mom kind of nibbles at my food. And I thought, my mom would never do that. I mean, I had trouble believing that one. I didn't really question him on it. Well, now I'm going, well, yeah, she nibbles on your food if she doesn't take the whole thing, for heaven's sakes. And where's my wonderful stepfather, Neil, when I need him, right? I'm completely defenseless. My mom pulled off the paralyzing food attack in magnificent fashion. And I was stunned. I just didn't, I was completely caught off guard. The moral of the story is my mom could be herself in any situation, whether in public or in private. She would just be herself. She was happy. She knew who she was. And she didn't hesitate to make the most out of any moment, you know, that came along. It's just the way that she was. So that takes us to number four. Number four, I have asked her many times in my life what it was like to be a 47-year-old widow. You know, the average age of a widow in the United States is 55. That was as of a number of years ago when I looked it up. My mom's 47, a widow, 10 kids at home, and me out serving a church mission. And there she is. And I said, how did you make it through? I mean, how did you do it with all those kids? That 20-year age difference in kids. How did you do it? And she would look at me and kind of smile, and she'd say, you know, actually, it wasn't that bad. I said, what do you mean? She said, just about every other day, she said, first of all, I had a lot of support from neighbors and friends. Secondly, I had a lot of church support, and that was helpful. But she said, third, I would go out to the mailbox about every other day, and somebody had sent me an anonymous $20 bill. And she goes, I miss those days. And I went, how could anybody be that focused and that happy in the midst of, you know, problems going on? Well, I told that story, and I have bragged about her and that particular story for 30 years to people, strangers, you know, whatever. Just customers, whatever. I would tell that story because I'm so proud of my mom for what she did. So I told that story in a male church group in our church in Washington, D.C. about 3 years ago. And a young guy named Andre, who joined our church a couple of years beforehand, came up to me afterwards and he says, hey, can I get your mom's name and address? And I said, yeah. I said, what do you need it for? He says, I want to send her another $20 bill so she can remind her how great the old days were. And I went, that's the most brilliant idea I've heard in months. And I gave him my mom's name and address. About 2 weeks later, my mom calls me. Hey, she said, who's Andre? I said, Andre? She goes, yeah, Andre. I said, Andre, he's in our church group out here. He's in our congregation. Why? He sent me the most beautiful card with a $20 bill in it, and I want to send the money back to him. I go, no, Mom, he doesn't need the money back. He sent it to you because he wants you to, you know, relive the old days of what it was like when you go to the mailbox and these $20 bills keep popping up anonymously. And there was silence on the other end of the phone for a second. And then she said, very simply, she said, I like Andre. And that was it. And that began about a 3-year cross-country, you know, correspondence through me kind of a thing between Andre and my wonderful mom. She would ask how he's doing. He would ask how she's doing. You know, please give your mom a big hug for me when you go see her again, stuff like that. Please say, Andre, I said hi. My mom had the ability to see the good in just about every situation that came along, whether that situation was good or bad. And she particularly had an ability to see the good in a very challenging, difficult situation like what I just described. Now, in a world where a lot of people would say, woe is me, why did God do this to me, if there really is a God, why does he let this happen to 47-year-old, you know, widows, not to mention 11 kids, you know, da-da-da. And that's natural reaction. I mean, that's a natural reaction. And yet here's my mom, who had the ability to put things together and keep her faith, basically. I was told, because I was gone at the time, I was out in Missouri, one of my siblings told me that my mom called all the kids together, all 10 of them, sometime after this had happened. And I don't think it was very long after my dad had passed away. And she said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get up at 6 in the morning, and we're going to read the scriptures. The Bible, basically, the Book of Mormon. I said, we're going to read the scriptures. And she said, we're going to get through this. And that was her determination. You know, when in doubt and when times are hard, turn to God and you'll get some help and things will work out and it'll be okay. And that's just the way that she was. And I could brag for another show about how cool all my siblings are and the amazing accomplishments they've done and what good people they are. We were all 11 of us there last Saturday at my mom's funeral. And 8 of them live in Utah. I live in D.C., a brother in Austin, Texas, a sister in Honolulu, Hawaii. When my sister found out about my mom's passing, she immediately got on a red-eye flight from Honolulu to try to get to Utah to see my mom, and she missed it. She landed about 3 hours too late. But she stayed there the entire week, did the floral arrangements for the funeral, and everything was amazing. My brother in Texas was on his way to Florida for kind of a multi-family Thanksgiving beach party that they do each year down there. Found out about this. We initially were told when my mom had a stroke that I think it was on Friday night, that we probably would only have for another 2 to 4 months. Within 24 hours, that diagnosis changed to 2 to 4 days. I got that word Saturday afternoon and booked a flight for Sunday night to go out. My brother got that word about the same time, Saturday sometime, and got dropped off in Mobile, Alabama, and flew to Salt Lake from Mobile, interrupting his family trip, sent the family on the west of the way down to Florida, and got there in time to hold my mom's hand while she passed. Now, that's pretty good. That's really good. Those are the kind of siblings I had. All right, so I've taken you through my top 10 list of the greatest things I saw my mom do in her life. We've gone from number 10 to and including number 4. I'll be back to take the 3 last ones here in just a moment. For the Junk Refund Show, coming to you from the Costco parking lot at the I-66 transfer station in Fairfax, Virginia, a show dedicated to my mom and her amazing, almost 95-year life. I'm Alan Cook, proud to be her son and the host of the Junk Refund Show on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be back in about a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. This is your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from Fairfax, Virginia, the Costco parking lot, across the street from the I-66 transfer station, which is the dump, which is where I'm going in about 20 minutes after this show is done, because the dump back in Montgomery County, Maryland, is shut down right now until Monday. So I had to come over to Virginia unexpectedly to empty a 16-foot steak body truck and then I go off to play and pick up more stuff after the show. So anyway, I'm here telling you about my wonderful mother. This is a show dedicated to my mom, who lived almost to her 95th birthday. We had her funeral last Saturday. This lady is so spectacular and marvelous, but I'm doing the top 10 greatest things I saw her do in her life. We've gone from number 10 down through number 4. This is number 3. We're doing this in David Letterman style. I was with her one time driving south on I-15, Interstate 15, just south of Ogden, Utah, which is just north of Hill Air Force Base out in Utah. And as we're driving down the freeway, my mom hears an F-16 flying overhead. I'm driving. She's in the passenger seat. She leans forward, looks up through the windshield at that jet. And with a little bit of anxiety and emotion and a little bit of frustration, she says, "I want to know what that pilot knows." Now, she was probably 91 at the time, right? And I said, "You know, Mom, that pilot's up there looking down at you, saying to themselves, how in the world did she do genealogy indexing of names and did over 400,000 names? Now, if you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you know what I'm talking about. If you're into genealogy, you might know what I'm talking about. The whole concept is you go out to look at census records from around the world, various countries. You're looking for birthdays, baptismal dates, death dates, that kind. You're looking for information to find people that you can document by some kind of a date, right? You then enter that information into our church's computer system, which has, I think easily, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's a safe quote, the largest database of names in the world, right? And then if those people are related to you, anybody, once it's in the database, you can go in and search it. You can find, oh, here's my uncle, you know, Joe, you know, Dobbs from the 1800s, and you can go in and have various important ordinances, or we'll call them sacraments or something, let's just call them ordinances, performed for your ancestors in our temples, which is why we build our temples. So members of our church understand the necessity to get some of these ordinances done for people who have passed away, who can't do it for themselves now because they're up in heaven and may not have ever heard about, you know, being able to do this kind of stuff. And so we will go in on their behalf in our temples and do that work. In order to make that happen, you have to walk in there with somebody's name, a birth date. You know, you have to verify this person in some way. You know, the year they were born or the year they died or both and where they were born. Something that just documents, okay, this is a legit person and here we go. My wonderful mother in the last, I'm going to guess 20 years, somehow found time to go find 400,000 such names from various genealogy records around the world. I think many of them from England and Denmark, where her family was from, and Scotland. But that is a monumental feat for any genealogist, is to go find 400,000 names and submit those into the database so family members can then do something with it. You can't do anything until you first identify it, right? She would go in and look on church census rolls or whatever and pull off this information and then just input it into the computer, whether she was related to them or not. But here's a lady who in her 90s wanted to know what an F-16 pilot knows. And I even told her later, I said, "Mom, I think you're a little too old for flight school. I just don't think they're going to take you. 91, I doubt it." But she was fascinated by knowledge, and she was fascinated by genealogy. And she had a love for both. And that was a great thing to see. That here's my, you know, I'm cruising down the road in my, what, early 60s maybe? Here's my mom, 30 years older than me, wanting to know what a pilot knows. And I'm sure my mom is very proud of her other son, of her four boys, but her other son, who has his own plane, his own single-engine plane, and flies around the western United States. So there you go. You might not be the pilot yourself, but one of your sons is, and that's pretty good stuff. That takes me to number two. A few years back when I told her that Washington Nationals baseball superstar Bryce Harper, who is a member of our church, had signed a $330 million contract to play for the Philadelphia Phillies, my mom's only statement about that was, quote, "I hope he pays his tithing," quote. The tithing principle in our church is 10% of your increase. That's how we fund the church. And when you got 18 million people around the world, if they each paid, you know, 10 bucks in a week, you get $180 million coming into the church coffers in 1 week. You do the math, right? So anyway, her with my mother, it wasn't about how much money you made. It was about whether you gave a percentage back to God through his church. That's what it was to her. No comments about the 330 minutes. That was irrelevant to her. All she cared about was, I hope he pays his tithing, right? That's my mom. It's not about how much money you earn. It's about whether you give something back to God. That's what it was for her. And if you give that portion back to God, you get blessed. And those blessings add up. And my mom was one who got that. And that brings me to the number one thing I saw my mom do in my life. Back in 2003, on Mother's Day, note what day it was, on Mother's Day, I'm sitting in North Potomac, Maryland, as the bishop of our church congregation. I'm seated up on the stand of the chapel, in front of the chapel. Mother's Day in our, you know, congregation was really fun because my two counselors that served with me in what's called a bishopric, my two counselors would arrange for people secretly to be speakers in that meeting who were going to come up and surprise their mom and say great things about their mom. And if you looked at the printed program on those days, it just said speakers. It didn't list anybody's names, and my counselors set this all up. So it was really fun. Year after year, you'd have a child or a sibling or a spouse or a grandparent or a parent of some lady in the congregation go up and speak about how great this lady was, and the lady didn't know that this was about to happen. That's just really cool. So Mother's Day was always kind of fun when people came to church because we knew there were going to be some surprises, but we didn't know who was going to be surprised. So we're up there for the meeting. We're getting ready to go. I don't really know what's going to happen because my counselor set this all up. And this is in the Washington, D.C. area. My mom lives in Utah. It's about 2,000 miles west. About 2 minutes before the meeting starts, into the back of the chapel walks my mom, my stepfather Neil, and my brother Kent. And I was dumbfounded. My mom has 8 children, a boatload of grandchildren out in Utah that I'm sure were dying to come and see her on Mother's Day. But here I am in Maryland, and here's my wonderful mother who walks into the meeting out of the blue. I turned to my counselor on my left, and I said, oh my gosh, that's my mom. And he gets this sly smile on his face. He looks at me, and he says, imagine that. My mother was the concluding speaker of that meeting. And she stood up and talked about what she had learned, you know, the hardships of life, the joys of life, some success tips from being a successful spouse and mother. And the congregation just loved it. And when I realized, oh my gosh, this is, you know, Mom Sunday all of a sudden, I sent a note back to my brother and said, hey, do you want to join me? We're going to change the closing song for the meeting. Do you want to come up here and sing a hymn called Love at Home? And come up here and sing the first 2 verses with me, then we'll let the congregation sing the 3rd verse. Well, he gave me a big thumbs up from the back. So we changed the closing hymn. My brother came up, he and I sang Love at Home, and as a tribute to our mom on Mother's Day, and then that concluded the meeting. It is the greatest thing that I saw my mother do in her lifetime and in my lifetime of some 67 years that I've watched her. It was also, you might be interested to know, going back to what I said at the top of the meeting, it was also, or the top of the show, it was also the greatest thing that I had seen anybody do in my lifetime. Going back to my original talk about the 10 greatest things I've seen in my life, that was number one on the list of things my mom did and the list of things anybody did. That's how great she is. It is the greatest single thing that I have witnessed personally in my life among many wonderful and great things. Now, I concluded my talk last Saturday with one last little note, and that was that about a year ago, well, let me go back to my mom's business. My mom would leave the 90 and 9 to go out and find the one. And in this case, I was the one. And she left the others and came out to be with me on Mother's Day to surprise me and our church congregation. And it was the most amazing thing I've seen in my whole life. That was done by my wonderful mom. So I made a mention at the end of that talk. I said one last thing. I said, about a year ago, my mom said to me, quote, "I want my four boys to sing at my funeral," close quote. Last week when my siblings were putting together the program, I didn't say anything about that because there was going to be a chance that we were going to be asked to sing with a group or with something else. So I just kind of let things ride. But I kept that in the back of my mind. And I announced at the end of my talk that I wanted my mom to get her wish. So I invited my three brothers who had known nothing about this. I didn't say anything to them because I wanted it to be similar to what happened back in Maryland 20 years earlier. I invited them to come up to the pulpit and announce that we were going to sing the first verse of Love at Home for our mother and invite the congregation to join in and sing the chorus with us. My wonderful brothers, all with boutonnieres on their, you know, lapels, because we were half of the pallbearers, the four of us, went up there and sang this verse to our mom to fulfill her wish. And it was a very proud moment for me, and I know some people in the crowd took some photos of it, and I was tickled to be able to make it happen so that my mom got her wish. And then the congregation joined in and sang the chorus with us. Now, that's the kind of a mother that I had. And her amazing life deserves a shout out and some publicity, which is why I'm doing it today, because it's fresh on my mind. I just came back from being out there with her and all my family and everything, bunch of nieces and nephews and, you know, et cetera. And it was just a tremendous event to praise this God-fearing, loving, dedicated person. I mean, I don't know what else to say. When my dad died 47 years ago, one of his brothers spoke at his funeral and said, and this is from a group of three boys that were raised that were really good athletes. One of his brothers said, "One of these days when I die, I want to go to heaven with Allen's, my dad. I want to go to heaven with Allen's score." Okay? So I am thrilled for my dad. The deepest, most heartfelt tears that I shed in this past 10 days were tears of joy for my father, who after 47 years gets his bride back and gets to dance with his bride again up in heaven. He's been waiting 47 years for this. And I could not be happier for him. Hence the dedication of this show to my wonderful mom and my dad, primarily to my mom for her great life that she lived, what she taught me, what she taught all of us, and the great legacy that she left. It is a remarkable legacy. This lady went to heaven with a perfect score and handled the trials and tragedies that came into her life perfectly. As a model of how to not give up how to hang in there, and how to be happy in life. Her first marriage lasted 22 years to my dad. Her second marriage lasted 33 years. Not many people in life have had two long-term successful marriages and have also buried two husbands along the way and given birth to 11 children. And I think 56 grandchildren she has now, somewhere around a dozen great-grandchildren. And we might even be at the point where we got one or two great-great-grandchildren now at this point. I'm not sure. But anyway, hats off to Martha Horn Tingey Cook Rosenbaum for her life, for all the great things that she did, for the love that she gave me and anybody she was around for years. And we were just blessed. What else can I say? And that was something that happened in our favor, and this show is dedicated to her and to her memory. Come back and join us next week, Thursdays, 3 o'clock. We'll talk more about how to get the junk out of your home, and as we kind of did today, out of your life, by telling you some stories, true stories about both. And it's a privilege to be on the BBS Radio Network. Thanks to Don and his brother Doug for creating the network and host and being the producers of the show and all of their support. Have a great life. Have a great week. We'll be back next week to tell you more again about how to get the junk out of your home and out of your life. I'm your host, Alan Cook. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. Love you, Mom.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.